Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Marty Goldenson, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. In a bit over a month, many young urban furniture shoppers will get their wish. IKEA is finally coming to New York City. But the neighborhood in which it will open, the Red Hook area of South Brooklyn, is primed to undergo some serious changes as a result. It's a part of the city that has been in transition for quite some time, from arguments over the waterfront to controversy over Salvadorian street vendors. More importantly, Red Hook stands as an encapsulation of gentrification, issues facing neighborhoods throughout the city. To help discuss the changing face of post-industrial Red Hook are three residents of the neighborhood. Joining us in the studio, Robert Guskin, editor of the Gowanus Lounge blog. Also here, Lynette Wiley, co-owner of Jalopy, a music venue and community space down in Red Hook. And on the phone is Ian Marvey, co-founder and executive director of Added Value, a community organization that works to foster sustainable development in the area. Robert, Lynette, Ian, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thank you
so
much, Marty.
I heard three hellos. That's okay. Just so it's the right count. You know, you're all here. In a bit, by the way, we're going to talk with City Council member Bill de Blasio, and he'll be running for borough president next year and naturally has a lot to say about post-industrial Brooklyn. But I want to start by asking all three of you to help paint a picture of what Red Hook looks like on the ground. And for our listeners who don't know exactly where Red Hook is, we've posted a map on our website at WNYC.org. But I have a sense of it, by the way, because I go down to where the QE2, Queen Mary 2, docks every 10 days down there. But that's more a sense of the docks than the neighborhood. So I thought, Robert, you might start by quickly describing where Red Hook is located, what it feels like.
Absolutely. Red Hook is a South Brooklyn neighborhood. It's about a square mile in size and surrounded on three sides by water and has been cut off from the rest of Brooklyn by the construction of the Gowanus Expressway. So for the last 40 or 50 years, it's sort of been remote and out there by itself, and as a result kind of developed a special character apart from the rest of Brooklyn because of this isolation that it's had.
Lynette, you want to talk about that character? Because you are a character there.
The neighborhood is filled with artists, with people that both live and work there. So there's a real sense of community. Everyone knows each other. I was only there a few weeks before all of my neighbors had come and introduced themselves and told me what I was required to do to help the neighborhood grow. It's really a tight-knit community.
Before we go ahead, and I want to know, how you chose that community, et cetera, I think we want to stick to this IKEA thing for a minute. I just need to know also, as long as you're in charge, Robert, of our map, our mapping here, our personal GPS, where exactly is IKEA going to go? Can you give you a sense of how big it is? Give us a sense of how big it is and what's immediately around it or will be.
IKEA has a big waterfront site that was formerly the Todd Shipyard. It's about a mile of waterfront coverage from end to end. On Beard Street, which was for a long time a very isolated and quiet street, starting June 18 when IKEA opens, no longer.
Of course.
Yeah, no longer. Yeah. I heard you saying, of course, down that phone line, Ian.
Sure,
expand on that for us.
Currently, Added Value is working with the New York City Department of Parks and Rec to transform what was actually Todd Memorial Ball Field.
That's the community organization which you work.
That we work with. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we are directly across the street from the site. So we're actually currently IKEA's most immediate neighbor. So we've watched the construction go up. We've watched the roads transform. We've watched the staff start to fill the building up.
And I bet you haven't bought new office furniture, have you?
Actually, we have purchased some new office furniture from a local warehouse that used recycled material, and we actually did end up going to New Jersey to pick up some material that was required for our office. So.
I see. All right. You're morally pure on the furniture front.
Doing our best.
Yeah, that's good. But let's try to get a picture of how this neighborhood has changed. What did Red Hook look like, say, 10 years ago, 1 year ago? What's it going to look like the day after IKEA opens, which is to say now? And what's your sense of it, Ian, in 5 years?
Sure. Well, I'm a young Red Hooker. I've been here just 9 years, and Added Value has just been in operation for 8 years now. And the Red Hook that I met was much like maybe Smith Street was 10 years ago in Carroll Gardens and Cobble Hill. The vast majority of storefronts were on Van Brunt Street, which was the sort of economic corridor in the back of the neighborhood, were closed, shuttered, or with small artists occupying them with their art in the windows, a few bodegas, and a laundromat. On the other hand, there's Lorraine Street, which is the commercial corridor for the vast majority of people who live in this neighborhood, the folks who live in the New York City Public Housing Authority's Red Hook East and West. Those storefronts are full of bustling businesses that are catering to the needs of the folks who live there, a pharmacy, a laundromat, actually two laundromats, and some grocery, small grocery stores and bodegas. Since I've been here in the back of the neighborhood, we have seen an incredible transformation in terms of who's living in the apartments.
From what to what?
Well, my apartment that I live in is an 8-unit, 4x2, and the vast majority of people, I guess 7 of the apartments, so and excluding mine, have changed twice now. And where I was once paying $1,050 a month, I'm actually being asked to give up my rent-controlled apartment in exchange for a couple months' rent and the opportunity for the landlord here to charge $1,750 to the next renter.
So that's pretty common now, I bet.
Pretty common in the back part of the neighborhood. And the other thing that's very common now is we're experiencing throughout the city, and some of your other guests have intimated this morning, is that the housing authority is also emptying out in many ways. So I live across the street from public housing where there are 40 units, and of those 40 units, 4 are vacant and have been for more than a year.
Do you want to add to that picture, Bob?
Well, you know, this is a neighborhood where one could, over the last 5 years or so, find a lot of wonderful photos of burned-out cars. In fact, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I put up on Curb.com and my own blog, Gowanus Lounge, a photo of a burned-out SUV that had been torched down on Beard Street with the IKEA logo in the, you know, in the building in the background. It was a very remote neighborhood, and it still faces, you know, a lot of challenges in that sense. You know, IKEA's sort of been the 20,000-pound gorilla sitting in the corner that everyone's talked about for years, and well, now it's about to happen. And, you know, the estimate is that it will put 15,000 cars on a Saturday on the streets in this little isolated neighborhood.
And now, Lynette's shaking her head when she hears this portrait and sees this photograph in her head that you've just described.
Yeah.
Lynette, you're a relatively recent resident of the neighborhood, and you in fact chose Red Hood after, I understand at least, kind of nationwide search for the right neighborhood for you to go to. So tell me about a little bit about expectations and change and how you're reacting, what you expected, what you're seeing.
We did. We looked all around the country for where we could have a community art center where we'd be working with...
We being?
My husband and I.
Mm-hmm.
Where we'd be working with the residents who had lived there, who had a long-term history in the community, and also people that might be coming in. And so an artist neighborhood that wouldn't change as fast as the neighborhood we'd left in Chicago. In 5 years, the neighborhood was a completely different place, and it didn't have the kids that I was working with still in the neighborhood. It had all new people moving in from the suburbs. And so when we found Red Hook, we drove concentric circles all through Brooklyn and came upon that neighborhood, and we saw places like Sunny's, and we saw the public housing where people of all different races were living together, something that doesn't happen in Chicago. We really felt like we could make a home there. And one of the things that I think as a new resident we're trying to do is, as much as we can, offer programming that suits the people that have been there for a long time, as well as make people excited to come to the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We do a program every week with local police officers and children from the neighborhood where they do improv comedy and theater together. Mm-hmm. And the police officers and the kids wind up finding out they're much more similar, and they're very funny. And so trying to find ways to bring the community together. And I think that that will help us stay the Red Hook that it's been.
Ian Marvey, who is co-founder of and executive director of Added Value, which is the community organization at Red Hood, I hear you sort of telephonically nodding in agreement through this whole thing, because you're hearing good things that you wish could stay that IKEA is going to ruin, or do you think that, you know, this is just a quick sort of transition phase, multicultural, wonderful phase for Red Hook, and it's destined to be New Jersey?
I mean, Red Hook has been multicultural since its founding as a waterfront seaport community with, you know, Syrians and Italians and Irish folk, and then folks from the Caribbean and Black folks from the South coming up, and it is still very much a multicultural community, and there has always been a large divide as well. There are rental units and now very much home ownership in the what is referred to as the back, and there's a vast majority of people living in the public housing units here, and groups of people like Miss Shields and Miss Daly and Mr. Bazemore and Lou Sones and lots of people, John McGettrick, have been working to build bridges, whether that's through positive programming like Lynette is talking about or through community and civic action to hold the line, if you will, against whether it was garbage transfer stations or rezoning in the neighborhood. And I think IKEA, in one way, is just another challenge that this community faces. So, as Bob is saying, it's really, you know, it is the two-ton elephant. It's bigger.
Yeah, we differ about the weight of the elephant. But,
two-ton might just be right. Like a living room full of furniture, as opposed to the 200,000-ton elephant.
Let me just remind people that my name is Marty Goldenson, in for Brian Lehrer, who's just on vacation. Robert Guskin is here, editor of the Gowanus Lounge blog. Lynette Wiley, co-owner of Jalopy, a music venue and community space in Red Hook. And Ian Marvey, who you hear on the phone line from Added Value. Robert Guskin, you had something you wanted to jump in there.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that it's not going too far to say that the IKEA is one of these transformative projects in a neighborhood. And when this whole argument was going on, Kent Barwick at the Municipal Arts Society called it the worst decision the City Planning Commission has made concerning the waterfront in the past 20 to 30 years. And I think what Kent was getting at was both the decision to use a really valuable piece of the Brooklyn waterfront for a big box store, as well as the inadequacy of the infrastructure to handle something of that magnitude. And there's going to be other big box development coming next to it.
Yeah, and it's still a port. I mean, it's not exactly a tiny little neighborhood. It's still got cranes, right?
Well, not that part of the neighborhood. Not that particular
not the
part
IKEA
of the neighborhood.
Part.
Not the IKEA part. Those cranes are there strictly for decoration at this point. You know, the issue isn't IKEA. They occupy a wonderful niche in the home furnishings business. The issue really is, was this an appropriate place to put a store that's going to generate that level of traffic?
Yeah, in a few minutes, by the way, we'll ask Bill de Blasio, the council member, about
Marty, might
that.
I jump in here?
Please do.
So, Bob, I think that's really appropriate and right on. I mean, what you opened up with in saying, you know, the construction of the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway, and we know the Battery Tunnel had its own hand in this, and actually the GI Bill and its opportunity for all the guys who were down here who had been in the Marines and in the Navy and the Army to either, you know, go to college or to get a low income.
What was the connection there and when?
These are all big policy decisions that were made outside of Red Hook that deeply impacted this community. And the zoning decision to site IKEA in this neighborhood really is bigger than IKEA, and it suggests that IKEA, you know, is going to have an impact down here, but as communities here in New York, as South Brooklyn, as Harlem, as the folks up at Atlantic Yard are discovering, even out in Far Rockaway, we're all struggling with how to have a coherent policy that meets the needs of all the people of New York City, and continue to build sort of thriving, intricate, and interesting communities.
Speaking of decisions, you know, one of the things about Red Hook is the transportation. There ain't much of it, right? Is that right?
No, there's very little. You have a couple of bus lines, you know, service on which is going to be improved slightly to accommodate the influx of people.
But by the way, is it true it now says IKEA on the bus instead of Van Brunt Street?
Yes, it absolutely does. It absolutely does.
My
and
goodness.
You've got a subway station a distance away that's going to be closed for a couple of years for renovation. And IKEA is also running some water taxi service from Lower Manhattan. But I don't really think that's going to take a lot of people out of their cars. That's going to be the primary means of access.
Yeah, and I know there's a plan afoot, the very beginnings of a plan, to try to make real lanes and spaces and places to store bicycles. Mm-hmm. So you can either ride into Manhattan or ride to the edge and pick up public transportation.
Sure.
That's going to be a big fight, no?
I don't know if it's going to be that big a fight. I think, you know, pedestrians and bicyclists are going to face a lot of challenges in Red Hook. You know, we'll see how it works out starting in mid-June. The bicycle plan is a valuable one and something that's definitely worth doing. But there's some practical issues of people just facing this traffic onslaught in this neighborhood.
Right. Lynette, you're trying to run this community, you know, place where people to get together. There's arts and entertainment and togetherness. And we've talked about it in a fairly positive way, which is that, you know, IKEA is big and important, but not the death blow, right, to the neighborhood. It's part of a struggle. I mean, you see it that way, or are you disheartened?
It's part of a struggle. Red Hook has 25% of the residents it had in the 1950s. And what we need to do is build up the number of people living there and not let it switch into just an industrial and commercial neighborhood. And that's the fight that's going on right now. If we can increase our residents and really keep the community feel, then IKEA won't be a death blow. It'll be just a piece in our growth.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where we see some interesting things trying to work with new businesses and new residents in this community. Out of added value and this sort of notion of creating a more sustainable community is we'd love to be able to work with IKEA they have a 40,000 square foot green roof. Well, we'd love to turn that into an adjunct farm and be able to employ another 8 or 10 people from the public housing units and from the back in real living wage
jobs.
Hold
on 1 second. I got that look from Bob Guskin, which was sort of the dream on smirk, was that, or was that a different one?
Oh, no, it wasn't quite the dream on smirk.
Sure.
But I think it is important to talk about the partnerships now that IKEA is going to form with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need to talk about the number of, a really positive aspect of it is the number of people that they're going to be hiring. There are 500 jobs at that store. They have pledged to give preference to Red Hook residents. When I was on the site about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I couldn't get an answer as to what percentage of the workforce is going to be residents. And I think it's important to find out, you know, and the partnerships that they form with groups around the neighborhood are critical at this point.
It's interesting you raise it. Do we still have that caller number one on the line, on line one? Because I think they had some sense of the history of IKEA's behavior and some skepticism. Lee from Red Hook. Lee, you're on the air?
Yes, hi.
Yeah, turn your radio down, Lee, because
turned it off. Could you guys keep it down for a second?
Hi, Lou.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good.
I'm Lou Stones that I and Marvy mentioned. And I think a couple things that need to be mentioned about IKEA that kind of speak to them as not good neighbors. We offered them a full block site, square block site, right off the highway, which would have been much more appropriate, better for them, and more access. And they wanted to be on the most inappropriate part, the most least accessible part, on the waterfront. And to boot, they filled in a working dry dock, a graving dock. There are relatively few, not only in New York Harbor, but on the East Coast. And now the City Planning Commission has said what New York definitely needs is more graving docks.
Yep.
And Red Hook, in a meeting last week, who was capable of restoring that graving dock still, said, no way, we would rather have it for 14 units of parking. So they're really not the neighbors that makes a mixed-use community a viable community.
Response, anybody, three of you?
Oh, those are very important.
Thank you for
salient
calling.
Salient points about what happened during the planning process for all that. The graving dock was a very contentious issue. I personally feel that it was a loss of a very important resource for parking, of all things. But it's done. It's filled in. Presumably, it's reversible. But, yeah, there have been some very contentious points about all this, and as well as the selection of that parcel on the waterfront, which is a lovely one with a beautiful waterfront esplanade. But access-wise, from a planning perspective, mm-hmm. is an odd choice.
Yeah, but, go ahead.
And I think from a community organizing, community development, community empowerment perspective, what Lou is suggesting and Bob, what you've talked a little bit about and what your previous guests have talked about is that as a society, as New Yorkers, we all need to be able to have a louder voice in how these decisions are made. And this was clearly a decision-making process where the where power came to bear on how the outcome was determined.
Thank you so much for calling in. I wish we had a lot more time, but we have to move on, not from this subject, but to another guest about this subject. Robert Guskin is the editor of Gowanus Lounge blog. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely welcome.
Nice to see you out of cyberspace. Lynette Wiley, co-owner of Jalopy, a music venue and community place in Red Hook. I will drop by now that I know about it.
Thanks for the attention on the neighborhood.
Thank you. And Ian Marvey, co-founder and executive director of Added Value, a Red Hook community organization. Thanks for dialing in.
Thanks so much. Have a great May Day.
Bye-bye. We've heard a fair amount about how the Red Hook community feels about the changes in their area. Now let's talk about how politicians are going to tackle the problem, not just in Red Hook, but throughout Brooklyn. Joining us now is Bill de Blasio, council member from Park Slope, who's already announced his candidacy for Brooklyn Borough President, where he'll certainly have to tackle these questions of neighborhood change. Bill, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much.
So right off the bat, your thoughts on IKEA, do you support it? Do you think it'll be a smooth transition into Red Hook?
Well, I did support it at the time. I have to say, in retrospect, the planning process was not what it should have been. And I think this is what's becoming clear to many of us in public life. We do have to retool our planning process to bring communities into it much more deeply. I'm not sure it was as much about power dynamics as it was about lack of any coherent overall plan. I don't think we have a real plan in the city for how to use our waterfront properly.
What would that? How would that look in your eyes?
Well, I don't think you'd have a big box store in a waterfront location. I think it's that simple. I think what happened here was a developer had a particular vision and was able to generate some critical mass. And look, did do some important concessions in the process. Certainly, the local hiring, if it comes to pass, and I think we have to monitor that. That's an important piece. The open space, some of the transportation pieces that were added in. But in retrospect, a big box store does not make sense at a waterfront location. We should be focused on residential. We should be focused on open space. And where there's a particular waterfront industrial use, for example, the piers in Sunset Park and the potential for more port activity there, you know, we should focus on that job potential. But in essence, New York City has lacked any kind of coherent plan. We've come out of a time when we were begging the business community to invest in New York to a time where we have hyperdevelopment, and we've actually got to fundamentally change our planning process to look at the fact we have very little land and communities need to be involved in making these decisions much more deeply.
Right. I mean, obviously, process is important, but I was wondering what's your vision, for example, in all of Brooklyn's waterfronts? You know, how do you strike a balance between recreational use and industry? What's your thought here?
I think essentially New York City is moving in a more residential direction, and for good reason. You know, one of our great strengths is the fact that we're the center of a huge economy, and it makes sense to have people live close to that center. Again, the big exceptions to me to residential would be open space and particular industrial uses. You know, Congressman Jerry Nadler's had, I think, a very important idea of how to revive the Brooklyn ports and Sunset Park. And also the port in Staten Island and create a cross-harbor rail freight tunnel. That would revolutionize New York City economy and also take a huge number of trucks off the street of New York City and we move our freight by rail as we should. That's a use that I think absolutely is a valid waterfront use. But going forward, a big box store on the waterfront, I don't see that anymore in Brooklyn.
You're sponsoring an event on the 7th, and we've got a link on our website with the details, that will look at the Gowanus Canal area. What's your vision for that region, and you know, what's that event about?
Well, what we're trying to do is get the community more deeply involved in the planning of the Gowanus area and the Carroll Gardens more generally. Look, first of all, I'm a big believer in protecting the residential neighborhoods we have, so we have to downzone Carroll Gardens residential streets. But in terms of the Gowanus Canal, the immediate area, we need to get a committee process together that really talks about environmental cleanup of the canal itself and of some of the brownfield sites around it. We need to ensure that infrastructure, schools, public safety, roads, sewers, everything is talked about in the development process. Again, this is something that regularly has not happened up to now.
Does it amaze you, Bill de Blasio, that we're still talking about how to organize the democracy at this stage of things, all these years after Robert Moses is cutting up, you know, Brooklyn with the BQE?
You're absolutely right. That's exactly the way to put it. We are still trying. We're trying to perfect our democracy right now around these issues. And I do think it's not shocking that if you go back 20 years and we were still in a situation where gentrification was pretty limited around the city, and a number of neighborhoods were still struggling. You know, 20 years ago, you were just out of the fiscal crisis of the 70s. I don't think it's shocking that we were very late in recognizing we had tipped and gone 180 degrees from begging for development to experiencing overdevelopment.
Yes, so it did happen fast.
It did happen very fast in the scheme of things. We're a diverse city. There's a lot going on. It makes sense that it took everyone a while to catch up with the reality.
And getting back getting back to IKEA for a second, in that you've got this big box next to the water, isn't it time for politicians like yourself to be advocates of rebalancing it as much as possible, the best bike lanes, the best public transport, access where it's possible to sort of undo what might have been a mistake in your eyes?
Absolutely. I think that's the right way to look at it. I think, first of all, I'm a big believer in what we can do with bike lanes and greenways and all the things we can do to give people better alternatives in terms of personal transportation. But, I never think the development process is sort of won or lost at any particular point. And I've tried to emphasize this to folks in the community. Whether a developer is seeking a rezoning or whether they're acting as of right, we still, as communities, need to make demands on them at the forefront and then continue to make demands throughout. I think open space, providing transportation alternatives, employing folks locally, for example.
I have to forgive me having to suppress the example, Bill de Blasio, council member from Park Slope, because we are out of time, but we'll talk again. You'll come back on, I hope.
I look forward to that.
Great. Now, I see what you're saying, which is to say it is a process. We have to move on, oddly enough, this is why I have to shut you down, to Queens and talk about microcredit. Will it work there? We'll be back.